Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
There was some security breach in that process, but we can confirm now that the gallant military officials in Sierra Leone have retaken control over all our security installations in the area.
Sierra Leone's government says a nationwide curfew aims to help a joint security operation to arrest those responsible for the attack on an army barracks earlier Sunday.
The Electoral Commission has got a legal obligation to publish the list of the locations of all voting centers and their coordinates, and then therefore display all the lists there so that the voters can go there in their areas to see whether the names are on this list.
Congolese opposition leaders petitioned the Constitutional Court to order the Electoral Commission to publish the final voter list before the election.
Our role as academic institutions is to educate, to train the public about human rights or about various aspects.
And the University of Dar es Salaam lecturer calls for a commitment towards a continuation push for human rights in Tanzania. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Seventy more aid trucks entered Gaza from Egypt's Rafah border crossing Saturday, day two of a truce between Israel and the Hamas militia group that controls Gaza. The second phase of a hostage and prisoner swap is also expected to take place Saturday between Israel and Hamas. For VOA, Edward Uranian reports from the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
Observers along Egypt's Rafah border crossing leading to the Hamas-controlled Gaza Strip say that more than 70 fuel and aid supply trucks had entered Gaza from Egypt by mid-afternoon local time Saturday. A Hamas spokesman told Qatar's Al Jazeera TV that foodstuffs, fuel, water, and medical supplies were among the main items entering Gaza. The second phase of a prisoner and hostage swap between Israel and Hamas was also in the process of being implemented Saturday afternoon as Israel released 42 more Palestinian prisoners from its detention centers, while Hamas was expected to hand over 14 Israelis to Egypt. A Palestinian human rights observer in the West Bank, Kadura Ferris, told a press conference the prisoner swap was unfair because Israel chose the names of those Palestinians it was releasing in exchange for hostages that it had selected. VOA could not independently confirm the claim. He says that Israel did not respect the principle of prisoner exchanges, which is the release of the longest-serving prisoners first. That, he says, almost caused the prisoner exchange Friday to fall through. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, for his part, said on social media platform X that he was determined to bring back all Israeli hostages, whatever the circumstances. We just completed the return of the first of our hostages, children, their mothers, and additional women. Each of them, he says, an entire world. But I emphasize to you, the families, and to you, citizens of Israel, we are committed to returning all the hostages. This is one of the aims of the war, and we are committed to achieving all the aims of the war. A Hamas spokesman in Gaza, Tahar Nunu, also complained to Qatar's Al Jazeera TV that Israel was not allowing more than 3 aid trucks into northern Gaza, and that could put the current 4-day truce in jeopardy. Israel has indicated previously that it was opposed to sending fuel and other aid supplies that would ultimately end up in the hands of Hamas rather than the civilian population for which it was intended. In other developments, Arab media reported that a container ship owned by an Israeli businessman was attacked in the Indian Ocean Friday by what appeared to be an Iranian Shahed 136 drone. The Times of Israel newspaper also reported that Israel shot down Hezbollah missiles that were trying to bring down an Israeli drone near the border. Despite the incident, Arab media reported relative quiet along Israel's border with Lebanon and noted that many Lebanese who had fled their homes along the border had returned from Beirut and other areas north of the country. Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV reported from Baghdad that Iraq's prime minister had written a letter to pro-Iranian Shiite militia groups, warning them that any further attacks on U.S. forces based at the Al-Harir Air Base in Erbil, just north of Baghdad, and the Ain al-Assad base in Anbar province would likely be met by serious U.S. retaliation. Edward Uranian, VOA News, Cairo.
Israel said Sunday it has received a list of hostages slated to be released by Hamas later in the day, with the U.S. saying it believes an American will be among those freed by the militants from their captivity in Gaza. A Sunday release will be the third round of hostages freed on the third day of what is planned as a four-day truce in the fighting between Israel and Hamas that is set to end on Tuesday. White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told NBC's Meet the Press that the U.S. has reason to believe at least one American hostage will be released Sunday. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Health Ministry said Sunday that Israeli forces shot dead at least six Palestinians overnight on the West Bank. Hamas released 17 hostages late Saturday, 13 Israelis and 4 Thais. A short time later, early Sunday, Israel freed 39 Palestinian prisoners. The hostages were released hours later than expected after the militant group accused Israel of violating the exchange agreement, claims Israel officials denied. Sierra Leone's Minister for Information and Civic Education says a nationwide curfew aims to help a joint security operation to arrest those responsible for the attack on an army barracks in the early hours of Sunday. Chen Oba says the military repelled unknown individuals who attempted to break into the armory of the Wilberforce barracks in the capital, Freetown. The army base is close to the presidential lodge. Local media also reports a breach at the central Padema Road prison and inmates free. Meanwhile, the Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, has sharply condemned the disturbance in Sierra Leone. It has called for the arrest and prosecution of those responsible for the illegal act aimed at disturbing the peace. For the latest development, I reach Information and Civic Education Minister Chen Oba.
In the early hours of the day, 26th of November, some unidentified individual attempted, in fact, to break into the military armory at the Wilberforce military barrack. There was some security breach in that process, but we can confirm now that the gallant military officials in Sierra Leone have retaken control over all our security installations in the area, and they are in the process of seeking to apprehend all those who were involved in the situation. I should state that it's still a volatile situation. There are pockets of gunfire across the city, and we have issued a notice for a nationwide curfew. Now, the curfew is tied to the operations that are ongoing, our efforts to find those who are responsible and to bring them swiftly to justice. And so we will continue to update the people of Sierra Leone and indeed the world on the status of that operation, and we will accordingly update as well the situation of the curfew.
How are Sierra Leoneans reacting to the situation?
People woke up to just the sound of all of this and reports of all of this, and people are disgusted, scared, angry. If you look across our social media, because we know that our democracy may be imperfect, but we are in the process of perfecting it. We have made some incredible strides just in the past couple of weeks on the peace agreement that we have, following negotiation with the opposition. They are now, our parliament is fully constituted. We have the committee that was set up to review our election has been set up. And Sierra Leoneans are just shocked that after everything that we've been through, a group of individuals will choose to sow this kind of fear and seek to make our country unstable. But we are also confident in our security force and in the leadership of His Excellency, President Julius Maada Bio, who is fully in control. And as I said, we're in the process of ensuring that those who are responsible for this legal action are apprehended and brought to justice.
You talked about the recent agreement following dialogue between representatives of the government and the opposition, where the opposition has decided to return to parliament. Do you think part of those processes have culminated, or has any bearing on what happened this early morning in Sierra Leone?
Well, these are early times. We absolutely cannot make any determination at this minute on what the source of this, what is connected to or unconnected to. What we know is that the political leaders in the country have shaken hands, are moving forward. We're trying to strengthen our democracy, and that those who seek to sow this kind of discord and to do chaos will be dealt with according to the laws of our country. We are sure that the peace and democracy will prevail, and that we will restore full sanity across the country very swiftly.
Does the government know how long this nationwide curfew will last?
The situation is fluid. The government has tied the curfew very specifically to the operations that's ongoing, which are to apprehend the retreating renegade individuals who have carried out or attempted to carry out this illegal activity. Once they are under control, once we are confident that we have at least the majority of them fully under control and that the situation is secure and they have been isolated, we will continue to issue updates on the situation. The plan is not to continue the curfew indefinitely. We will want normalcy and peace and tranquility to be restored for our citizens, and it's in their interest that this curfew has been imposed for now.
Is it the military that is undertaking this operation, or is it just the entire security apparatus of Sierra Leone?
It's a joint entire security apparatus. So we've got the military, our OSDs, our police, and everybody that's involved in the security operation, including our intelligence officials, are fully involved in this.
Chen Oba is Sierra Leone's Information and Civic Education Minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Freetown.
Away from the vibrant capital, Nairobi, the northern region of Kenya is dealing with severe drought. This week, we are bringing you a special edition of Our Voices, part of Voice of America's recently released documentary, Hunger Voices. We are highlighting the effect of climate change on women and girls. We hear from a woman promoting a solution and encouraging everyone to take action. Join the conversation on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on the Voice of America.
In the DRC, main opposition leader Martin Fayulu, Nobel laureate Dr. Denis Mukwege, and four other presidential candidates have petitioned the Constitutional Court to order the Electoral Commission to publish the final voter list before the coming December general election. They are also expressing concern about the lack of transparency and alleged voter irregularities during the electoral process. The commission rejects the accusation, saying it plans to organize free and transparent elections. This, as the presidential candidates, including incumbent President Felix Tshisekedi, step up their campaigns in the run-up to the polls. For the latest development and analysis, I reach Herbert Kabasu Babu Katulondi. He is an author and a former governor in DRC.
I think it's a very important and crucial demand. There are two requirements there. The Electoral Commission has got a legal obligation to publish the list of the locations of all voting centers and their coordinates, and then therefore display all the lists there so that the voters can go there, their areas, to see whether the names are on this list and the names have been properly written and so on and so forth. That also allows candidates pinpoint where the observers will go. Therefore, these candidates are right, and it is a legitimate request.
Do you think the Electoral Commission or CNE faces a challenge? For which reason it has not been able to voter list up until now? Because the elections are a few weeks away.
Look, the Electoral Commission is facing tremendous, overwhelming challenges, not only relating to those lists and also the location of voting centers, but also with regard, for example, to voters' cards, identification. Those cards, they've used a mediocre technology which makes the writing on the cards to disappear. And the Electoral Commission said that voters can still go to the branches, get new cards. However, when many voters go there, they can't find the details in the system. That's number one. But number two, the Electoral Commission doesn't have the voting machines so far. The old voting machines that were used for elections in 2018, they say that about 70% of them are obsolete. And the Electoral Commission says they will use those machines with the new machines that they've ordered from South Korea. And these machines are still there in South Korea, number one. Number two, these machines, the procedure of the modus operandi of these machines.
I understand three opposition presidential candidates dropped their bid to ban Moise Katumbi. Why are they not coming together if their objective is the same, which is to challenge President Felix Tshisekedi in the elections?
Well, the first problem I would say is from the perspective of a political scientist is a problem of the Congolese political culture in general. Politicians are mainly very egotistical. They believe that they've got some kind of each of them has got some actual messianic sort of a role to play, gives him special attributes that others don't have. So that's number one. But number two, also, you'll see, for example, Mukwege will feel like he's got a higher moral stance, which prevents him from, you know, associating with Fayulu. And Fayulu believes that he won the election in 2018. Therefore, he believes that he's the right candidate to be supported because he's got that reference. And Moise Katumbi believes that he has got more experience in terms of clearly designing projects and programs and implementing them. He has got that experience, which is known provincially, nationally, and internationally. So it becomes difficult for them to sort of associate.
There are suggestions that the lack of forming an alliance to have a common opposition presidential candidate will make it easy for President Tshisekedi to win re-election. What are your thoughts?
Well, deductive, extrapolation logic, it would make sense if they are divided, because it's one round of election. So Tshisekedi can win with 20% or even 18%. So, it makes sense. Logically, it makes sense. However, as things are going on, taking into account Tshisekedi's experience as president, and the fact that Tshisekedi himself said that his key, crucial, vital priority is security in the East. And Tshisekedi himself said that if he's not able to improve security in the East, he himself will consider that he had failed. And now the reality on the ground is that security has worsened. So Tshisekedi, on the basis of what he himself had said, it's a major problem.
Herbert Kabasu Babu Katulondi is an author and a former governor in DRC. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. In Tanzania, University of Dar es Salaam law lecturer is calling for a commitment towards a continuation push for human rights in the country. Veronica Buchumi also says the cooperation between the government and stakeholders, including civil society, academia, media, and human rights defenders, is inevitable. Her remarks follow the conclusion of a two-day conference to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in Tanzania. Organized under the theme, Rethinking the Past, Present and Future of Human Rights Promotion and Protection in Tanzania, the conference was held at the University of Dar es Salaam Library. For more about the meeting and the major takeaways, I reach Veronica Buchumi.
When we finished the program, there was good feedback from the participants. And I can confirm to that was a good forum where we had an opportunity to discuss about various human rights in Tanzania and how we can improve the protection and promotion of human rights in the country.
Do you think there's a need for protection of human rights and the respect of human rights, since people say that Tanzania is one of the most peaceful countries in East Africa?
Well, Tanzania is peaceful, and to a great extent, I would say human rights are respected, but also it's still important for us to continue emphasizing on the need of the country taking necessary steps, especially in those areas where we might be lagging behind, especially in the area of maybe social and economic rights, where sometimes there's no much voice in such kinds of rights.
One of the topics discussed was the role of academic institutions in this regard about the respect for human rights and protection of human rights. In your estimation as an academic, what do you think the role should be moving forward?
Our role as a academic institutions is to educate, to train the public about human rights or about various aspects. And we, like today we had a reflection, like for instance, what does the School of Law at the University of Jerusalem participate, or like what role does it play when it comes to issues of human rights? So for instance, at the School of Law, as it was presented today, we teach human rights law, but we also provide legal aid to the community around us. because we know access to justice, which is at the core of enjoyment of human rights, is important. And for some members of the community, for instance, they can't access legal services because of maybe expenses involved. So at the School of Law, we do legal aid committee. But apart from that, it's important for academic institutions to invest time to research and disseminate the findings of the research to bring an impact, to have a vivid impact to the society.
Now, talking about human rights, do you see a role where there's an engagement between state institutions, the government, civil society organizations, academia, and human rights defenders in this fight to ensure the protection that the Constitution affords in the Constitution? Because oftentimes, certain institutions like the police or even the military are accused of violating the rights of Tanzanians.
The importance of cooperation among these groups that you have mentioned is indispensable or is inevitable, because each group, civil society, the academic institutions, the government, or the different state actors, they have different roles or at some point they even have different capacities when it comes to promotion of human rights. So for instance, we in the academia would do research and, you know, bring evidence based on research that we do. And then those in the civil society organization, sometimes they raise their voices higher than those in the academia. And at some point, having cooperation with the state, it helps the state to see what perhaps they might not be seeing, or they might not be, or openly see. So having a forum where all these actors could come together provides a better opportunity to raise issues, discuss them, and see how they can be addressed in a common manner.
After this conference or two-day summit, what happens next? What's going to be different?
So for our part is to continue organizing dialogue, continuing to see how maybe we can reach more members of the community to talk to them about human rights, to be aware. For instance, our guest speaker, our guest of honor yesterday talked about something that was very important, that when we talk about human rights, it's about me, it's about me and it's about you. It's about what I do to myself and what I do to others. So what came out to me was like selfishness can hinder the enjoyment of so many other, like the rights of so many others. So it's not, we shouldn't always look at maybe what the state will do, but sometimes what can we do as, you know, non-state individuals or those who are not forming part of the authorities, that we also have part to play. So for us as academics, as civil society organizations, our role is to continue raising our voice. We just don't end at the commemoration event, but that should become our daily life. Reminding people the importance of respecting each other, respecting the space of others. That's how I can briefly respond to your question.
Veronica Buchumi is a University of Dar es Salaam lecturer. She spoke with me from the Tanzania commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. In Uganda, the government chief whip in parliament is calling on the opposition to return to resume their duties of representing their respective constituencies. Dennis Obua says it is about time lawmakers from the opposition stop their political activism. He adds that the administration in Kampala has met its obligations by tackling concerns about human rights violations. His remarks come after the opposition said they plan to continue to boycott parliament until the government demonstrates commitment to investigate and prosecute those responsible for violations. Joel Senyonyi is a leading member of the opposition in the Ugandan parliament. He tells me that they are undeterred in their demand for the respect of human rights.
The prime minister of the country, Robin Anabanja, came out and said the state arrested some of these people, suspecting them of having committed certain offenses. Fair enough. Anyone can be suspected, you know, to have committed a particular offense. But what do you do with the suspect? You produce them in court. But what does the state do? And they're holding them in unknown detention facilities for over 4 years. That is illegal. You know, even when you're a suspect, suspects have rights. The family should know where this person is being held. They ought to be produced in court. So they're being held. No one knows where they are. We don't even know if they're alive, and they want us to be quiet. No, we shall keep demanding for these people. If that is to be activism, then we shall keep up the activism, because that's what we are supposed to do. We shall not get back to parliamentary plenary until we get answers from the regime.
Well, Dennis Obua, the chief government, says that the government has already provided explanations
about human rights violation and has fulfilled its obligation. He kept referring to your boycott of parliament as political activism, which he said you should stop.
The speaker gave an ultimatum that in 30 days, the government, the executive, will come with a comprehensive response. The 30 days expired on 19th of this month. They have not produced a response to us. So what do they want us to do? You know, because the other day the speaker said, well, the minister who is supposed to give a response is out of the country. Well, until the minister returns and is ready to give a response, we shall not return to the House.
While the NRM supporters, the ruling party supporters, are urging voters to hold opposition lawmakers accountable for failing to represent their interests in Parliament. Your response to that?
The voters are actually happy that we are sticking on to this issue because, you see, life is more important than anything else. And so they are happy that we are stepping up pressure for people to be accounted for by the regime, okay? Because, you see, if we keep quiet about these matters, more people will continue being kidnapped and it will be business as usual. So we want to tell the state that even one person being kidnapped and detained for over 4 years in an unknown place, it is wrong. So for 18 people to be missing for all these years, we shall not be quiet. Once we keep quiet, the state will realize they can keep kidnapping people who annoy them, who are opposed to them, and it is okay. So we are not going to make this okay.
Eddie Kwizera, one of your colleague parliamentarians who represent the Birika from the NRM side, has questioned why you have not taken your grievances to court, emphasizing that the issues of killings and missing persons did not arise from the 11th parliament. Some are even accusing you of a publicity stunt to appease your paymasters abroad. Your response?
When you ask them serious questions and ask them to account, they begin to say, you people are foreign agents, you're being, you know, funded by the West. Okay, let's even imagine that is true. Of course, it's not true. But let's even imagine, you know, that there is any scintilla of truth in that. Are the issues we are raising not critical? Have people not disappeared? So why don't you respond to those issues? Why keep diverting around? Okay, so the question of that, you see, these were not kidnapped by Parliament. Well, it is in Parliament where we raise these issues and the executive is meant to respond. And they're not responding. Some have said, why don't we go to court? We have been caught to court several times. Court has issued orders, okay, for these people to be produced dead or alive. Those are writs of habeas corpus. And the state does not respect court orders. Mr. Museveni has come out severally to say, for example, when a court issues an order regarding land and so on, before it is put into action, an RDC, those are very junior officials, have got to first approve whether court made the right decision or not. So that's how they disregard court orders. We have actually gotten court orders for all these people to be produced dead or alive, and the regime has not produced them. So we shall use the platform that we have, which is Parliament, to ask these questions.
Joel Senyonyi is a leading member of the opposition in the Ugandan Parliament. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. In Cameroon, the main opposition Social Democratic Front, or SDF, is planning to announce national executives to lead the group. Thus, following the recent October convention, where representatives of the party were elected to lead the biggest opposition party in the next general election in 2025. The move comes after the death of John Fru-Indi, the founder and leader of the party. Observers say the party appears to be losing support, as seen by its poor election performance over the years. Yvonne B. Muma is a leading member of the SDF who has been re-elected as the National Secretary for Political Education and Training. She tells me that the new executives plan to build on the legacy of the party's founder to attain greater heights.
The main positions of the party, some were elected and some were re-elected. And normally, following the constitution of the SDF, after a convention, the new national chairman has to complete the National Executive Bureau. The National Advisory Council shall be convened, and once that is complete, we'll have a national ESCO meeting now to deliberate and come out with resolutions that the National Executive Bureau was empowered.
Cameroonians that I spoke with were wondering if this newly elected team is competent enough to build on the legacy of John Fru-Indi, who is the founder and leader of the party until his demise, established in Cameroonians' geopolitical issues.
Yes, I have trust in all those who were elected, especially the national chairman, Honorable Chief Joshua Nambangi Osi. That's someone who's been in the party for 33 years, for as long as the party has lasted, and has shared so much in common with the late legendary chairman. We all are from his. When he was chairman, we all were around him, and we've learned a lot from him.
What do you say to those critics who are of the view that the SDF, for the last few elections, has been a shadow of itself? It has not been competing like it used to compete to win a lot of seats in parliament, and particularly pose a significant challenge towards the ruling party. In this case, the head of state, President Paul Biya. Your response to that?
Peter, you agree with me. Anybody who watches the political scene in Cameroon knows that the dwindling effects that we feel in the SDF are same in every other political party. I take an example. In 2011 presidential elections, we had close to 6 million Cameroonians participating in elections. But when you come down to the 2018 and 2020 twin elections, we had less than 3.5 million Cameroonians. So actually, it means the voter apathy, Cameroonians in general, have lost interest in politics. Then every political party has its base, its political base, and that of the SDF is the Northwest and Southwest, which are today wrecked by the socio-political conflict that is ongoing since 7 years. You cannot, in the midst of war, expect election results. We used to have a majority of our, let's say, members of parliament from the Northwest region. Yes, we fielded candidates for all of those, but insecurity did not permit citizens to go out freely and vote.
Do you think criticisms that the SDF has not made its voice heard regarding the ongoing conflict in some parts of the English-speaking areas or Anglophone areas?
I, speaking to you and all other militants, we joined a party that preached the federal system of government. The SDF has never been a secessionist movement. These critics mistake what the party stood for and what is ongoing. No one will prove to us that every citizen of the Northwest and Southwest stands for secession. The secessionist movement, we knew them since the 60s. This SCNC, the SDF was never anchored on that. That party was not founded on that. But we preach the federal system of government, and we still stand.
Yvonne B. Moma is the SDS National Secretary for Political Education and Training. She spoke with me from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Botswana's Adjoaneng Galaxy sent shockwaves across the continent after edging Moroccan giant Wydad Athletic Club with a historic 1-0 away win in a CAF Champions League Group B encounter in Casablanca on Saturday night. Galaxy, who are only making their second appearance in the group stages of the biggest club competition on the continent, not only go top of the group, but do it in historic fashion, with the win being their first ever victory in the group stages of the CAF Champions League. The historic victory sees the Southern African side from Botswana move to the summit of the group, following the 1-1 stalemate by Simba AC and Essek Mimosa in the earlier kickoff on Saturday. Meanwhile, in Cairo, reigning champions Al Ahly fired a strong title defense warning shot with an emphatic 3-0 win over Ghana's Midema. Also on Saturday night, two Tunisian giants, ES Tunis and ES Sahel, kicked off their group stage campaign on home soil in a highly anticipated derby that concluded with host ES Tunis walking away as 2-0 victors. In women's football, South Africa have pulled out of the contest to host the 2027 Women's World Cup, citing fears they will have to deliver a rushed presentation to FIFA during December. The deadline for submitting comprehensive plans for the tournament is the 8th of December, and South African officials believe it will be wiser to try and host the following edition in 2031. The withdrawal of South Africa reduces the 2027 contest to 3 bids, joint ones by Belgium, the Netherlands, and Germany, and Mexico and the United States, and one from Brazil. A FIFA Congress on the 17th of May 2024 will decide which bid succeeds and follows co-host Australia and New Zealand in staging the increasingly popular 4-yearly tournament. Staying with football news, two African sides, Mali and Morocco, battle for a semi-final spot on Saturday in the ongoing FIFA Under-17 World Cup in Indonesia. It was a late Ibrahim Diarra goal that earned Mali a 1-0 victory over Morocco to book one of the 4 semi-final tickets up for grabs on Saturday. The 2015 finalists will now face France in the semi-final on Tuesday, while Germany will play Argentina in the other semi-final match. In basketball news, 9-time Ugandan champion City Oilers are through to next year's Basketball Africa League. The Mandi Juruni coach Oilers played for a 72-61 win over Burundi's Dynamo in an East African derby in the first semi-final of the East Division Elite 16, set to conclude on Sunday in Johannesburg, South Africa. South African champions Cape Town Tigers became the second team in the East Division Elite 16 to seal a slot in next year's Basketball Africa League after seeing off Madagascar's Cospin 67-63 in a highly entertaining match played on Saturday at the Ellis Park Arena in Johannesburg. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. As we follow closely the implementation of the 4-day truce aimed at the exchange of Israeli captives in Gaza and the release of Palestinian detainees are prisoners in Israel, many views are being expressed as to what should happen when all cessation of fighting occurred. Already, President Biden has announced that in his view, this 30-year UN plan for two states in Middle East, with them living side by side of each other, should be implemented now. Also, the Arab foreign ministers and Muslim delegates that were shaped at the last summit meeting in Saudi Arabia 2 weeks ago, they traveled to Beijing, China, to Moscow, and to Britain to acquaint these countries with the decisions reached at the summit in Saudi Arabia, and they are urging the Chinese to be deeply involved in any future mediation of the Middle East problem. And the foreign minister of Russia, Lavrov, also said that they have extensive discussion with the delegation, and they have urged them to participate fully in any negotiation for a final settlement of the Middle East problem. We also heard from South African President Cyril Ramaphosa announced that he had initiated a virtual summit of the BRICS countries, of those current and all the others who will be joining in January. That is to say, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Iran, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Argentina. And they all agreed that in any peace talks, rich countries or their representatives should be at the table. The practical thing now and I would say even imperative, is that any conference to deal with the comprehensive aspect of the Middle East must be under the United Nations auspices. United Nations has a historical responsibility for the issue of Palestine, because when Britain abandoned its responsibility in 1947, it turned to the United Nations, and the United Nations assumed that responsibility. It drew up a partition plan, and a General Assembly resolution adopted that plan. And it was on that basis that David Ben-Gurion declared the independence of Israel. Therefore, it would be wrong at this stage for the United Nations to abandon its responsibility to any outside third party arrangement. We also know that while there is this common belief that the meeting should be called for two-state solution, the elephant in the room is the Prime Minister of Israel, Netanyahu. Netanyahu has a different vision. He has said that at the end of fighting, Israel will assume full responsibility for security in Gaza, because Israel cannot depend on any other entity to provide security. And we should not ignore the major speech that was delivered by Prime Minister Netanyahu at the 78th General debate in New York on the 22nd of September. It was a major speech. And he began the speech by criticizing those experts who believe that one must first solve the Palestinian issue before one can have rapprochement between Israel and Arab states. He said this is wrong because one should not give to the Palestinian people a veto power on Israel's relationship with Arab states. He also said that at the conference in Delhi, Group of 20, President Biden had discussed with Prime Minister Modi of India a major plan of a rail contact linking India, Saudi Arabia, and Israel, and that will bring about a major change in the Middle East. And he said only when that has happened, and Israel as reconciled with all the other states, can there be a resolution of the Palestinian issue. He did not say what form that will take. So this presents a dilemma for any negotiation under the United Nations auspices. But this is a test case, because his failure to move to this next stage of two states will be a Munich of the recent dress of the United Nations, which is to promote the maintenance of international peace and security. And if it fails for that, then we are in big trouble. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
Two for five nations.
And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
One plus one equal to two, two plus two equal to four, four plus four equal to eight, we gon' be straight. Mziki mtamu, paka watu wanarusha ro. Huu ndio mtoko, watu wamefurahi, paka wanacheza na ndoo. Substitute teacher, nakupa elimu walafu nakaa kimya. Kuna umeme wa kutosha, tunamshukuru Mungu. Hatuitaji luku, hatuishi kwa vurugu. Acha kurudi nyumbani mpweke, smile, kwa sababu we siyo bweke. Angalau maisha yanakupiga mateke, hakuna mtu wa kudeke. Haya maji ni marefu, endelea,
endelea kuelea shtuka pandisha mizuka angalia vyo kuzunguka mabadiliko yanakuja isn't that to admire every solution is a contribution of this empire it acquire to aim higher domana bado kuna mjadala tunamshukuru Mungu kutupatia hizi nguvu kugombania uhuru tunaukusanya angalau tunaonekana watu kutu
kweli wa amani na wewe kila kitu kipo shwari penzi lako upepo kama bahari tudumu when there's love in my heart bani kweli wa amani kila kitu kipo shwari penzi lako upepo kama bahari to do one is love in my heart body yeah
fanya unachofanya angalia usigeuke zoba bora uwe tayari kwa vyovyote utavyoona maisha yanakuja moja kwa moja hayakunji kona angalau unaweza ukakutana na changamoto ulizoonywa na wajomba ndoto zikaporomoka life is like a cafeteria there's a lot of thing to taste there's a lot of thing to waste gotta keep up with the pace become more fluent know how to embrace every evening a task closing every morning a task open find a way to leave the door open so you can come back with more token watch how I see me how are you we highly watch how I see me how are you we kwamba kwamba wewe ni mali watch how I see me how are you we kwamba amani inaweza kuwa hali na ni gharama ya thamani
All right, we are back in the studio, and we have a surprise. I'm going to let Jumbe intro this surprise.
Ibra.
What's that?
I think you're going to really appreciate it. I think you're going to really, this is one of our favorite songs.
No way, man.
And you're going to be super happy, bro.
Na than a Djibouti. Say I come from a free motherland. I'm rapping TZ, let it bleed to my hand. I think, say I come from a free motherland. I'm rapping TZ, let it bleed to my hand. I be, oh.
Nafunita lakini kitaa wananita Ibra Keiko wapi napotoka maendeleo kama New York vitu vya all sort motion as the issue unadhani unashuhudia your favorite sport watu wanaangaika on a daily basis wanajaribu kufika different places manasi yanawiva maembe yanamenywa mishkaki inapikwa adhana unazisikia it feels good to be finally here hanze na rungombe tell him kana mi mtafta mtaa tunapita tenda mti wapi basikeli zinatengenezwa washikaji wana kula kila aina furaha wa china wazungu wa arabu bonge la mixa wa oni tabu siku inazidi kuwa tamu everyday ni skuku kama ule mtaa unaunganika na Lumumba na uhuru watu wamechoka kupinda inafaa kila mtu wajua it feels kushinda dala dala zipo 24 hours no need to be sour kama unataka kusepa hamna mtu watakukevra but I guarantee you utarudi kutoka wapi unapokwenda unapokwenda See, I come from a free motherland. I'm rapping TZ, let they bleed to my hand. I be. See, I come from a free motherland. I'm rapping TZ, let they bleed to my hand. I be. Oh.
Wow. Ibrahim seemed like you was in a different space.
I was on a different space. Man, I actually, I missed home in that song. You know, I missed home in that song, and I felt like it was necessary for me to speak about the area that I'm from, like in Tanzania specifically, just to remind people, to tell them that, hey, listen, although I don't come back often, but I remember every single little thing that goes on in those streets. You know, so that was just telling my neighbors, telling my friends, telling my schoolmates, telling my coworkers that I, you know, over there before I came here, that, hey, listen, I might not be there, but I still miss home, and my home is always going to be there.
Yeah, you can hear the energy. Like, I can hear it. Like, it's way different. It was like, yo, you can hear. I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah. I just met you today. You know what I'm saying? I've been listening to your music, but when I listen to this track
mm-hmm.
and I listen to the other ones,
yeah,
there's a shift.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
You can feel there's the energy.
Shift. Yeah. This is one of my favorite verses from Ibra. Actually, see, we're not even going to go there. But, yeah. And this is one of the... This song is actually... Guess when we recorded it?
When?
2015.
Wow. So yeah, it was a different time.
A long time ago. But yeah, that's the whole, it was going to go on this album I had called, I mean, I still have it. It's just not on that album. But it's called Asili Hypote, Your Roots Shall Never Fade. So we have a song called 301, the area code of Maryland, 2255. So it's like a,
okay. It's like a story. I like it.
Because the beginning part of the album is supposed to be like my life here in America, and then my parents decided to take me to Tanzania. So then, right. So this song, Telemuka, is like, now we're like touching down in Tanzania, in Dar es Salaam. And like, I'm explaining from my point of view, like, yeah, coastal vibe on a very smooth day. I sit back with my pan, you know what I mean? And then he comes in, he's talking about where he's from, the city that he's from. I mean, not the city. It's
the area of the city that I'm from.
The area of the city, because Dar es Salaam is the city, and then they got like the little pockets.
Right, right, exactly. Right,
the counties.
The counties and stuff, yeah. So, yeah, it was, and it's one of these songs where I'm like, man, every time I'm like, Ibra, we should release it.
Yeah,
so now I just told him.
This one was.
Now I just told him, I leaked it. Leaked it now.
Now we leaked it. Now we got to release
it now.
We got
to do something.
We got to do something now.
Thank you.
amefeli. Mapenzi yetu yakazama kama meli. Too impatient to wait for the best. You ran back to less without realizing you left me heartless. Became a puzzle like a game of chess. Miaka imepita, nafanya vitu watu wanadithia. Imekuwa chanzo we kurudi njia. Imekuwa chanzo we kurudi njia.